Hi, everyone. I'm Anka Corbin, your host on this Moving Fast Tech podcast. Joining me today is Chris Driscoll, the Vice President of Engineering at Commercial Tribe. The topic we're going to talk about and really dive into today is technical debt. Chris, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me on the Moving Fast Tech podcast and just sharing your insights.
Thanks, Anka. I'm excited to be here, and thanks for having me on your podcast. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, sure. So I started my career about 13 years ago, right out of college. I got a computer science degree, started working for a large hospital up in Minnesota. And there I worked on a team where we built full stack diagnostic imaging applications. So we worked for nuclear medicine and we supported that department with roughly 70 applications between about five of us developers. So a lot of kind of trial by fire in my first role, kind of learning on the job and picking up a lot of things at speed. And kind of while I was there, it was a very large company, 50 some thousand employees. And I started really getting into this thing kind of called Agile. And it was very slow moving at my large company. And so started kind of looking for some opportunities and came across one in Boulder, Colorado, working for a company that was kind of an Agile thought leader, an Agile ALM product company even. So I went up there, took that opportunity, led a few web development projects over the course of a few years there, building an online community for our product users and building an e-commerce platforms to sell some of our digital learning content. That company ended up going through an acquisition. And kind of through that process, I decided to move to a smaller startup in Denver, Colorado called Commercial Tribe, which is where I'm at today. And I've been here leading product development teams for the last 5 to 6 years, doing web, mobile, and backend development to support our sales coaching products.
That's awesome. Well, thank you. You know, I just want to remind you that the Moving Fast Tech podcast, it's a really free flowing format. I'm going to just ask you some questions and then it's totally up to you where you want to take this. So, all right, so let's dive in. You know, when we talk about technical debt, I think everyone has an idea or thinks that they have an idea. And I just want to make sure that, you know, when we start, we really are defining it and talking about why we're even talking about this and how it develops, just so we're kind of setting the stage, if you will.
Yeah, I think this is a great question and obviously a really good spot to start. And I think in terms of how you define technical debt, this probably varies a little from team to team in terms of how they might define it. But I believe in general, it's kind of been a term or a metaphor used to describe things that we know we'll come back to or take care of over time. So it borrows a lot from the, you know, financial debt kind of concepts. And so we can think of technical debt as a tool where we as borrowers or builders of software, we can leverage this to acquire certain things like milestones, features, or feedback a little bit faster in the near term, knowing that there's going to be some potential future payments or some work needed to maintain what we just built. And kind of taking that a little bit further, if we use some of the concepts from financial debt, like principal and interest, if we compare that to technical debt, we could say, for instance, that, you know, your interest payments are the amount of work or the time that you're taking to address technical debt as you're trying to work on other features. And then your principal payments, they might equate to something more like you're actually working specifically on the technical debt and you're trying to solve that problem. So you're taking a bigger chunk out of that debt. So if I have a lot of debt and some code that we come to often, we're going to be making interest payments more often and maybe even some principal payments as well. And depending on how bad that technical debt is, we could be making some high interest payments. Or if the debt is pretty minor, you know, maybe we're making, you know, zero interest payments or principal only kind of payments, if you want to kind of continue the metaphor there. So that's kind of how I would define it. I correlated a lot to just the financial debt kind of metaphor there. And then in terms of why and how does tech debt develop? I think it can kind of occur in a few reasons. And I think Martin Fowler does a really good job to simplify this. And he talks about a concept he calls the tech debt quadrant, where he kind of says tech debt falls into four categories. That is, you have kind of deliberate, reckless tech debt. You have deliberate, prudent tech debt. You have inadvertent reckless tech debt, and you have inadvertent prudent tech debt. And so reckless tech debt might be debt that requires a lot of work or a lot of interest payments. So think of it as like a high interest kind of debt you might take out. Whereas prudent debt might require a little bit less work or a little bit less payments over time. And so then you can break that down into sometimes that debt is taken on deliberately and sometimes it's taken on inadvertently. And there's situations that kind of fall into each of those quadrants, if you will. And so I'll share some examples to kind of illustrate. And so a deliberate reckless tech debt might be something like, this new code is not refactored or tested, but we need to merge it as soon as possible so we can test in a staging environment. And this would be a deliberate debt because we're deciding to take this on. It's also reckless because anybody who works on this feature or in this code, they're probably going to have to pay significant costs to enhance it or to get something production quality. We take on debt like this on our team kind of often where we might be trying to continuously integrate some kind of unfinished code. And it's a little reckless in that if somebody really wanted to move that to production or make it available for users, it's going to take some work and some pay down of that debt. But we like the continuous integration aspect of kind of getting it into mainline and not having long running branches. So we take that on deliberately. And then a deliberate prudent debt might be something like a customer needs a simple bug fixed right away, and we're going to get this released and we're going to follow up with some automated regression tests right after. And I think a lot of development teams have kind of gone through a debt like this where you've kind of, you're trading off some time and speed and getting something out, knowing that the risk is pretty low. So in this case, it's deliberate again because you're deciding to take the debt on, but it's also prudent in that it doesn't really cost much and it's not high risk to other teams to not have that covered in the near term. And then kind of moving into the inadvertent side of the quadrant, you'd have an inadvertent reckless debt, which might be something like, hey, I wrote this third-party syncing integration, but didn't leverage any enterprise integration patterns or service bus because I just didn't know about them. This would be inadvertent because you don't know. You may not have experience with message brokers, et cetera. But it's also reckless in that this likely won't scale this process. It may even fail. So it'll likely get into production and be a very high cost to the team. So very reckless in that regard. And then you kind of have the inadvertent prudent debts, which might be something like our observability stack is showing us long running queries on this table. And if we added this index, it would improve that. And so this would be inadvertent because we may not have known to add that index ahead of time or optimize for that query. But it's also prudent in that it's not very costly to pay that off. It doesn't take much risk or any time. So it's kind of, I like that breakdown Fowler has of kind of breaking it into stuff that's reckless, stuff that's prudent, and then kind of even categorizing that further into what's deliberate and what's inadvertent. And I think what we ideally want to avoid is a lot of the inadvertent debts. And then we also want to avoid taking on too much reckless debt at any one point in time.
Yeah, I thought that was super helpful. You know, we all know that technical debt is a part of the development process. And from your perspective, do you think that there's a best practice on how much time to focus on new feature development or new product development versus tech debt? Do you have a sense that, you know, how do you figure that out? Are there best practices or is it really up to everyone's situation?
Great question. So this really depends on the types of debt that you have and how often you're paying them and how much interest you're paying kind of over time. In my opinion, when choosing what debts to focus on, this aligns really well, again, with the financial debt concept. So ideally, you'll be in a situation where you're paying off your high interest debts sooner than your lower interest debts. You're not going to find many financial advisors that, or at least any good ones, that are going to tell you that they would recommend you pay off your house at 3% APR before you pay off your credit card at 28% APR. And the same is true for technical debt. We'd want to prioritize the debt that is causing us the most trouble the most often. And that's the kind of debt we want to really focus on. So that kind of covers how we choose to prioritize our technical debt, at least in terms of what we choose to go after mostly. In terms of when we prioritize it, we kind of do a few things that helps us. The first thing is we talk about our debt a lot on our teams. And so we review and groom a technical debt Kanban project weekly with input from the entire team. And this has been this has been really huge in just kind of understanding other people's pain points, getting the entire team together to discuss some aspects of the code that maybe you're not as familiar with or that you haven't touched in a while. So to just kind of get everybody talking about debt and specifically tech debt. So a lot of times you'll talk about this and it might be you're talking about a user story or you're talking about a feature and somebody might mention, hey, there's some tech debt associated to this. You might talk about it in the AC. But what I'm talking about here is actually taking some time, allocating 30 minutes, 60 minutes, whatever it ends up being kind of on a weekly basis, biweekly as part of your cadence where you're sitting down and you're just grooming a debt-only backlog where you're focused specifically on that. Because what I find is if you don't have this, then it kind of goes hidden or people won't talk about it or it won't come up or it'll only come up as somebody's actually in the middle of a story working on something. And so getting people to talk about it, getting your team to talk about it, understand it, visualize it, super important. Secondly, we do allocate a percentage of our capacity each week for unplanned work. Tech debt and other kind of essential work that wasn't planned kind of falls into this. Typically, this falls around 30% capacity for us. It can be tracked and adjusted kind of team to team. So we kind of take our velocity, we cut 30% off the top of that. That's what we go into to the sprint with planned work. And then typically we'll bring some stories in, we'll bring some tech debt related items in, and those may be stories that we point. And then that kind of fills up that rest of that capacity. And then we just track that and kind of adjust it over time, sprint to sprint. And then third, if we're making larger principal payments on tech debt, we're gonna create those tickets ahead of time in Jira, and we're gonna have a lot of visibility into that. We're gonna plan for it a lot like we plan for feature work. And so on our team, we do this a lot with feature toggles. And we release code pretty often. We have a continuous delivery pipeline, and we use feature toggles really to control some of these experiences that may not be completed yet, but there is kind of work or code that can be merged and can be deployed with it toggled off. And so when we create feature toggles, the feature toggle itself is tech debt. And so we know that we're gonna have to remove that feature toggle at some point before we even start working on a feature. So because we know that, and because we don't wanna forget about it, we're gonna create a ticket for that. And we're gonna have that reflected in our planning and in our backlog. So there is times we'll create the tech debt kind of cleanup ticket, if you will, even before the tech debt was created, just because we know we're gonna have that. And in terms of like a single best practice, I can't think of really any single best practice other than to talk about and visualize your debt as often as you groom normal stories. So just making that tech debt discussion a part of your process and not treating it like it's a bad thing. It's an inevitable thing. It's something that we can leverage and use to our advantage. So just kind of talking about it and having it in the forefront of your team, I think is probably the best practice that I would think of.
Yeah, that makes sense. You had mentioned Jira. Are there any other tools or processes you use to visualize tech debt that someone might learn from? Or is it primarily more of a project management and just making sure that it's cataloged, if you will, and discussed? Or do you have kind of other things that you're using?
Yeah, so we use a couple different things. So we use Jira mostly for some of the larger kind of tech debt items or for like the feature toggle cases that we talked about. There's other kind of ongoing patterns that get changed in code that is kind of like a ongoing technical debt. Those things we put actually in a GitHub project. And we do that so that it's not cluttering the Jira board. The product uses that. And it also allows us to tag our PRs and our commits with that actual tech debt issue. And it allows us to track those. So on our kind of weekly basis, when we're talking about tech debt, we're often grooming that GitHub project. And then some of those things will get promoted into Jira. And then we also we leverage linters for our code. We do a lot of Node and JavaScript. So if there's certain patterns or certain file name conventions that we have decided to move forward on and we're strangling out the old kind of usages, we may put some linting in place, some tools like that to kind of document the new patterns. We also use just comments in code to document the intent of our code. So we'll put, even if it's a very quick, just fix me comment, something like that in the code to actually express, hey, this is some tech debt that we know about and we want to get rid of. That can help as well.
That makes sense. A few of us were talking recently about, all right, so tech debt is just a reality, right? We know that. But from your perspective, is all debt created equal, or is there some debt that you actually just intentionally leave in the system?
Yeah, all debt is not created equal. In fact, it's usually not just one debt, it's many debts. And that is, you know, we can think about this kind of in similar with the financial concepts. You might have, you know, in financials, you might have a car loan, a home loan, and some credit card debt. And so you have different types of debt at different interests. And so that's the same thing that you can think about with software as well. And software development is tech debt's not created equal. And you have some of these things that are kind of high interest things that keep coming up often. And then you have some things that are, you know, not going to be a high interest thing, or things that you don't have to come back to hardly at all. So if you have technical debt that is, you know, something that's 0% APR, meaning it's not getting in our way as we do feature work, then we may just wait, and we may never actually pay it off. And the good thing about technical debt versus kind of financial debt is there's no amortization schedule. Like there's mm-hmm. nobody calling you every month to say your payment's late, whatever. I mean, you can decide on when you take this debt kind of burden off and when you want to pay it and when you don't want to pay it. And in fact, you may defer some of this debt to the point where you may even forgive it. So for instance, this happens for us where we might be doing some split testing or introducing some new functionality where we've introduced some technical debt because we want to just A/B test it, get it quickly in the hands of a few customers, get some feedback. And then we may decide, hey, we're actually not going to go with this new thing at all anyways. So rather than clean up the technical debt or do anything associated to it, we just remove it. And so that can be a way also to get rid of debt, is to kind of just forgive it and remove that functionality altogether.
That makes sense. You know, when you think about development in general, are there clever ways to develop products so it's actually easier to take care of tech debt later on?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I think some of the things that would help, kind of in my opinion, would be what we talked about a little earlier. So bringing that tech debt into your process. So making some process changes where that's becoming part of your cadence, where you're talking about it and you're visualizing it. I think it's a Peter Drucker who said, if you can't measure it, you can't improve it. So you want to at least be able to visualize these things and then measure whether, you know, things are moving through to tech debt in progress, to tech debt completed. And you want to be able to kind of track that. It's also a really good way when you're tracking it to celebrate some of those wins as well. So when you get rid of some tech debt items, or you've finally retired some pattern, or you got rid of the last class component in React, and now it's all functional components, like your team should celebrate that. We like to celebrate those cases. So visualizing that and having that kind of reoccurring meeting where we talk about it is like a moment where we can kind of reflect and celebrate and kind of as a team just galvanize around, you know, our ability to solve some of these problems. I think beyond that, there's, you know, having a robust continuous delivery pipeline. This is huge for tech debt, for featured velocity, for pretty much, you know, if you want to be delivering software in kind of the modern era, you're going to want some form of continuous delivery pipeline that includes automated deployments, automated tests. You want the low ceremony releases. And the reason why you want this is so you people feel confident when they're making some tech debt fixes or getting that into the code base. You want them to feel confident in doing that, and you want to allow that to happen more often than not. So, you know, if it takes you a lot of time to deploy your software and it only takes you like 30, 40 minutes to solve some tech debt, and you want to just get that in, well, you may not do it if it's going to take a, you know, 3 or 4 hour deployment. Mm-hmm. But if your deployments are automated and they're fast, you know, if you've got 30 minutes on a Friday afternoon that you're trying to kill, maybe you go in, clean up a little debt, commit it, get it pushed out. And, you know, as long as you have a pipeline that can support that, then I think your team is going to be more willing to kind of address those things. And then what we were talking about earlier as well, just around kind of documenting the intent in code. So as a good practice is when you're coding to actually document the intent. And so, you know, I've heard my code is self-documenting or code is king kind of get mentioned when we talk about adding comments into code. And what I find, code is really good at telling you what is happening, but not necessarily what should happen. And so I've seen cases where we've got, you know, a new pattern that we've introduced, old pattern is still around. It wasn't well documented or deprecated. No comments were put in there. So a developer comes in, sees the old pattern, applies that to a new problem, and they've just now inadvertently introduced more technical debt because they weren't aware. And so something as simple as just documenting that intent. Like we mentioned, just if it's as simple as a fix me comment, that's great. But just put something in there to say, don't copy this or don't use this as a pattern. This is a like technical debt item that we'll get to eventually. Something to designate that, I think would also help.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, it's funny. We all know that if something's broken, it's pretty obvious that something has to be done about it, right? But when do you know when is the right time to address technical debt? And then how do you actually convince management that's on the, we need new features, we need new product releases? How do you communicate that it's really time to spend, just a bunch of sprints on technical debt? How do you navigate those difficult conversations?
Yeah, definitely. And this is always a little tricky, especially in the cases where debt has gotten to the point where it has to be solved and you haven't planned for it. Then it's kind of like an oh crap moment. And so I think trust is a big thing with kind of your management and your team. And so they need to have trust that anytime you're addressing technical debt, you're doing it for the sake of delivering more value faster to the business. And so it needs to be presented kind of as a blocker to delivering that value. And then I think it's a little bit easier to discuss with management and with the business. And I also know the earlier technical debt discussions can start, the better. So if you're, for instance, developing a MVP feature or solution, try your best to foresee the potential technical debt or hardening that may need to occur and start communicating that as early as possible. And that just helps set the proper expectations with the business that, hey, you might see something on this day, but we're going to keep working on it for the weeks after. And we know that, and that's deliberate. And so the earlier you can start those conversations, it just helps set those expectations a little better. And it's also important not to treat technical debt as a bad thing or something we should always avoid, but rather as a tool that we can leverage to accomplish a business objective a little bit quicker. I think a lot of times debt has this negative connotation where people, they just want to avoid it and they don't want to have debt, and they hear it and they think like something went wrong or something is bad that's happening. And so I think just as a technical leader, it's kind of our responsibility to, you know, help share with the business that technical debt is not a bad thing. Using it as leverage to usually release quicker, those kinds of things. So there's good things about that debt where, you know, if you don't talk to the business about this, they hear the term debt and it's immediately like, oh no, something's bad. We have to pay down something. We're going to, you know, be taking a lot of time off and paying off whatever. But as long as people kind of know it's just part of it and part of the process, it's a little bit easier to communicate.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Now, we know that really highly skilled engineering teams are super hard to hire for right now. And it's an incredibly competitive market out there. With technical debt, can it impact hiring and the recruiting process? Is it a tool that can be used? Like, okay, we're super clean and you're going to be working on fun new things versus having to work on technical debt. I'm just curious if companies are using it as a hiring tool.
Yeah, I think so. And I think they should be, especially if they take it pretty seriously. I think it can hurt recruiting as well and hiring. I think the way that we see that is if you're going into an interview and you're starting to ask about the technologies that are being used. And for instance, if somebody is using, you know, Angular version 1.7, which I believe is going to be deprecated at the end of this year, A, you're going to have a hard time finding someone with recent experience or training with that. And you're also going to have a hard time finding somebody who's going to actually want to work with that technology kind of being outdated. So keeping kind of your technologies up to date with some of the latest trends and versions is super important, because that's going to help you find people with the more relevant skills, more modern experience, people more interested in actually working for you and working in that technology. And then I think it also, your approach to technical debt, you know, it speaks to your culture in the hiring process. So we ask all of our candidates about technical debt in our hiring process, but we also like to talk about how we approach technical debt. And we think this is a really good way for us to actually sell our culture and to kind of sell our company and get someone excited about joining our engineering team. And we just try to show that we care and that we put a lot of time into keeping things well kept, keeping things up to date. And so we get a lot of candidates that come through and they're actually really impressed, or they've gone to other companies and done some interviews and they come to our company and they're saying, well, you know, how are you using the latest version of React already? Or how are you using Hooks already? Like, we get people who get very interested and very excited about our opportunity just because we're able to kind of keep up with some of the latest trends a little bit quicker because we take it a little bit more seriously. So definitely helps us. And I think another big thing, you know, tech debt has an impact on is not just the hiring, but also the retention and attrition. So if you end up, you know, as an engineer, you're working at a company and all you're doing is technical debt and not delivering features, or every feature you deliver is so difficult because of the interest payments you're making, you know, that can have a significant impact on a software engineer's morale. And that's a little bit harder to quantify, but this is something that will typically come up in those kind of team discussions around tech debt, or it'll come up in your one-on-ones, and you'll see this taking place with this kind of morale shift where, yeah, if you have a lot of debt and developers are continuously working that sprint over sprint, it's going to have an impact. Developers like to release value and like to put things in front of customers. And so, yeah, being able to give them the opportunity to do that goes a long way with keeping them happily employed.
That makes so much sense. Absolutely. Chris, this has been a really great discussion. I think technical debt is an amazingly fascinating topic, even though it's a really, really hard topic too. And I just want to thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today and just having you as our guest. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was really great to be here and share some of my thoughts with you.
Absolutely. So to our listeners, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast channel and join us next time for another Moving Fast Tech podcast so you can hear from industry leaders like Chris about tech leadership challenges, the latest technology they're considering, preparing their company for the future, and other interesting tech topics.